Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at internetadvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Add to that list Cal Carson as well, who's here to answer questions. And by the way, that allows us to answer questions both about PCs and a few of you out there who are on Macs, Apples. Please feel free to call in. I mean, as a matter of fact, we have a couple people here on iPads. Gary, you use an iPad.
I do. An iPad and an iPhone.
Quite a bit. And Cal, you do?
Scary that he discloses that publicly.
you service them, don't you? Too,
no,
Ed?
No. You know, Cal and I were working on some last week, and I'm just so pleased to find out how many times they do crash and how many problems they have, just like PCs. It just makes my heart just smile.
So, you know, I was having problems last week. I came in. I had problems with there was a corrupted OS for the Apple operating system, and I downloaded it to my phone. This was 2 or 3 months ago.
Oh,
and I went
into
the Genius table, and they said, oh, it's the battery life. I'm going, no, this just happened. The battery was fine. It just happened. Oh, no, here's the battery's the problem. Finally, they went through and they checked it wasn't the battery.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I said, look, we just need to wipe it out. You won't let me go back, but let me wipe it out. And I had to reinstall.
See, because Gary does know what he's talking about.
And so finally did that, and the battery was fine. Now with a completely new restall, it worked for
so that two. Was that same version you reinstalled, by the way?
So I did, it was a clean install, and it wasn't corrupted that time. So it worked for 2 months, and then last week I was having a problem. I went back into the store at Briarwood, same problem. Oh, no, it's your battery. I said, it is not the battery. Please listen to me.
It is a rogue app. Yep.
So finally I just left, and I did a complete restore because they couldn't help me. And guess what?
It works.
No. iPad is having the same problem now.
The iPad
is.
Yeah,
so I lose my battery. And because the battery is much bigger and has a longer battery life between charges than the phone does, instead of running down in about an hour and a half, it runs down in about 4 hours.
Maybe we can talk a little bit more about this after we take some calls.
So I just have to reinstall.
About the whole issue of the operating systems on some of these other iPad devices, iDevices, if you will.
Yeah, and you know what? I go to the boards out on the internet, and there's a lot of people having the same problem.
So we gotta figure that out. Is it a rogue app?
It could be. That we can't determine how, you know, if it was the operating system or not. The first time it definitely was 4.3.1. Even Apple has said, yep, that was a problem.
Right.
And now we're on 4.3.3. Now soon to go to 5, right, when the new OS comes out,
too
I believe.
Many
version 5, I believe, you know, they will
we're
take
hoping
care of
that
this.
They've leapfrogged over many of those things.
But it could be a rogue app too, right?
All right. Yeah. Let's go out to our phones and say hello first to Ed from Detroit. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Ed, what can we do for you?
Well, I'm wondering what's going on with Adobe Reader 10.
Okay.
I can receive documents, but I can't save them. The save button does not light up like the rest of them do. I went in and I've repaired it.
Mm-hmm.
I still get the same results.
So
I go into update, and update says it's fine, but I can't get.
Is this with an email or through a website that you're trying to access these Adobe files, these PDF files?
No, I have people send me PDF files.
Okay. Well, a quick fix would be to right mouse click on it and select Save As. That way you can save it before you attempt to open it. So you can save it on in your favorite folders or My Documents or wherever. And while it's still in the email, and then later on, assuming that you're using a PC with Internet Explorer or Firefox, it'll give you the ability, do you wish to open this file now that you've saved it, or would you like to open the folder the file was saved in? And then that's your choice at that time. At least it's saved at that point. But
you're right,
I'm not sure why Adobe, the 10 update, I haven't noticed that. But there's usually a little diskette option.
Mm-hmm.
Icon on the top right, on the top left,
let me
that lets you save.
Question.
Sure.
Can I right click it to open the file before actually opening it?
Yeah, you can right mouse click the file and select open, or right mouse click it and select save as and save it somewhere.
Okay.
So what Ed's suggesting is this: save it somewhere.
Now, I didn't ask if this was a PC or Mac.
It's PC.
Okay.
It's PC.
Okay. So definitely right mouse click.
Yeah. Okay. And then save it onto the top. Well, now, so then, is there a problem, though? Have you guys, have either of you or any of you heard about problems with Adobe 10 in particular?
I have not. I've not upgraded one of my machines. The other one I did. I didn't have any problem on the first one.
Nope. And I haven't heard any. Just a couple.
So there might be a corrupt installation.
I'm using 10.1 on my Mac now, and it's doing just fine. What I might suggest to him is that he do that. In fact, go into Add Remove Programs. Remove that version of Adobe Reader, reboot the machine, and then go back to the Adobe website and reinstall it once again and see if that will alleviate the problem for you.
You might want to take and boot it up, boot it, you know, take and power down again. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes there will be remnants of Adobe left, and it'll self-clear when you boot down again.
Broken registry files.
So, and then boot up the second time, and then you'll be able to reinstall.
All right, Ed Tinkercracker's a couple of solutions there for you. Hope those things solve your problems with Adobe. And we will be getting back to our phones, and as a matter of fact, welcoming somebody from Canada, Duncan, from Toronto in just a moment. And if you'd like to call us, the number is wide open for you. 800-859-0957. 800-859-0957 put you in touch with the Internet Advisor and hopefully get you some solutions to your problems.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. You can find more resources to protect your computer on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Thank you again for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. By the way, don't forget, 24/7, internetadvisor.net is your resource for all your computer needs. The forums is there to have a question answered during the weekend. And we also have Ed's excellent advice that is stored there for you, plus past programs you can listen to. And with our program notes, you can go and visit many of the places and listen to some of the people and get information about the people who have been on the program with us.
I can't tell you as how many times during the work week that I have to refer people that I work with to go to the internetadvisor.net to pull down this article or this anti-spyware utility or this malware tool or this bootable CD.
Great resource.
Yep.
It's a great resource. And Ed, you've been one of the people who made it that way. Thank you very much. Duncan from Canada. How you doing, Duncan? Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi there. Recently, I found some malware in a few of my registry entries, and the antivirus and the anti-rootkit software that I used claimed that it had deleted them.
Excuse me, what did you use, by the way, just out of curiosity?
This happened on two occasions. The first time, a couple of weeks ago, I happened to use the online scanner from eScan.
Okay.
And then the second time, something was found. It was with Trend Micro's Rootkit Buster.
Okay. Good. Okay. Have you tried Malwarebytes by any chance?
Yeah, actually, I have Malwarebytes on my computer.
Okay.
It just turned out that I have a number of things, but the first scan I did with the other software just happened to find it and followed up with malware.
Okay, so you used those two products. What was the end result then?
Well, the end result is that my computer's been working fine. The thing that made me suspicious initially was that I'd gone to a sort of a risque website on a couple of occasions, and each time I suddenly lost my internet connection. And I either had to reboot or reset the modem to get it to work again.
Mm-hmm.
So my main concern basically is I'm just wondering whether the malware has possibly maybe reset my settings or actually even affected my actual malware programs because I've got three programs now. When I try to do an update, I get a very very funny. Remote computer URL when the firewall says allow or deny.
Yeah, yeah. So something strange is being approached by your computer after you've gone to these risque sites. Now, your mom told you never to go to those kind of sites, but you're still going to those sites.
Yeah.
And those are the sites, am I right, guys, that are often seeded with all sorts of malware.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, actually, they're seeded all over the place. Those are generally the places where things are because they know a lot of people go there.
Right, exactly.
But My suggestion to Duncan might be, have you used CombiFix yet?
No, I haven't. But could I just mention that the specific thing that's really concerning me at the moment?
Yes, go ahead.
Well, wait, before you do, I wanted to say one thing.
Yeah.
And when you go into the registry, and the way these antivirus programs work is they disable the antivirus, they remove it, or they quarantine it, or the malware. But a lot of times, they may remove the more damaging portions of the registry entries that called up the program. But you'll still find, I call them orphans. You'll find orphan files and orphan registry entries that basically don't mean anything. They just take up, they're just text lines and leftover, the remnants.
And they don't do anything but bad to you, but they're there.
Yeah, but when the malware scanner runs, it thinks there's something there, but it really isn't.
Right,
you
so
know,
you
I
can,
still,
you
I
can,
still use CCleaner for a lot of that to get rid of those.
Right.
Do you guys?
And as an example, you can install Norton Antivirus and then there's not a single reference of Norton in your registry, but after you install Norton and uninstall it, you'll find probably 500 lines in your registry that reference Norton antivirus.
So let's get back to helping Duncan here, then.
Thanks for the extra information. I appreciate the understanding a little bit better. When I try to do an update on with my Sophos antivirus online, my Trend Micro online, and my eScan, which are all online scanners, I have a supplement.
Okay.
My firewall comes up and says, "Do you want to allow or deny?" And I get in the remote computer line, I get instead of just a number, or instead of it saying, for example, Sophos, and then the actual URL number, it says host hyphen, and then there's a number like 209 or 210, and then it says concordsales.on.ca.
Okay.
And then it gives the actual URL number. There are three different ones that sort of pop up randomly.
Okay. So your concern is when you're seeing Concord sales coming up in there, and I think you're talking about that little space often at the bottom of your browser that shows you what the site is that you're being taken to. It's not where you believe you should be going.
Yeah, so I've denied it every time. I haven't even gone to the update.
Okay, well then at that point, and we're going to have to limit it probably to this, I think you might want to use something like the CombiFix, which in conjunction, Cal, with
malware bytes
seems to be the cocktail that works for knocking out a lot of these buggers.
Yeah, except rootkits. But he said he had a rootkit scanner. But let me clarify something. You did say that you're getting these firewall messages coming up when you are attempting to update your legitimate software.
It's just a routine ask me, allow or deny.
Right, but it only happens when you attempt to update.
That's correct.
Right. So they may not say Sophos or any of the other ones, but they could be going to other third-party sites to download it.
Right.
But it's something you're initiating.
And you may want sales in there. I think that was one of the things that made him a little leery.
Well, with freeware, if it's a freeware product,
that's true.
You know, they're going to want to pump down some, you know, marketing stuff. You know,
so
you may want to call them or contact their sales support and explain what you've seen as well.
But I think what counts, at least my taking this, guys, would be that you're better off with your own software that you got on your computer that you're using rather than going out to being taken out to a site for the software. Am I right?
Right.
For the spam and malware.
That's the way I would fix it. And after I ran those two software programs against the computer, if you still felt uncomfortable that you don't have it all clean, my recommendation would be to back up whatever data you want to save on it, initialize the computer, and reload software.
Okay,
right.
Duncan, I think...
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave it at that because it is kind of complicated, but he's raised a couple of things. And I think there's an issue there that if you're using remote malware and spam removers, you're always kind of at risk because you're having to go out to get them, whereas if you have them on your own computer, if you have the malware bytes on your computer or the CombiFix on your computer, you're not as susceptible? Am I right or am I wrong on this?
No, I think you're right. And the eScan that he was referring to is a remote one. But as we found out that the malware bytes is $25 for a lifetime you know, membership right. for, so and it, real-time protection.
And it's not remote that's the problem. It's when you get when it's suggested that you go to this site. So there's software engineering. It's phishing. That's the problem. If you were to go directly out there, type in the URL and go out there, now you know where you're going.
Yeah.
You're not following what? Somebody else who says, "Quit, hey, follow me. I'll take care of you."
We're coming up on a break in just a minute because I want to talk to them about this a little bit more. Jerry in Cleveland, Ohio, will be with you after the break. But before we get there, this whole business about watching that little thing at the bottom of your browser where it happens to show up, it tells you the site that you're going to. I think that's becoming very important. And that's what caught his eye was right. It says it was taking me someplace that I didn't want to go or I was suspicious about going.
Exactly. Well, if you were to have, as an example, any website that you bring up, it's bringing probably from 10, 20 different websites because you got marketing and ads and, you know, right. I mean, it's coming from all over the world, from every website you visit.
So and really, that when you have a content mashup, right, when content does come from different places, that's the way the web is moving. So they're not all going to come from one box, even in the same data center. Sometimes the boxes could be sitting next to each other and have different addresses for those boxes.
It was interesting, though. His firewall was flagging those.
Well, and it's interesting because there are lots of times today that they can't get malware, they can't get viruses on your computer unless they trick you into putting it on yourself. And that's what they're trying to do with phishing.
All right. Jerry from Cleveland, Ohio, we'll be back for you. And 800-859-0957 is a number for your call to the Internet Advisor.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. For help with any computer problem, call in during our live show or visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
And I'm Foster Wren, along with Cal Carson and the rest of the crew in the studios here, looking for your call at 800-859-0957. By the way, after our programs, we always post a podcast. That's a recording of the program where you can always go back and catch up and find out some of the information. If you didn't get all the information we were talking about at the time, you can then download it yourself and listen to it at your leisure. Then you can do that by going back and looking for under the show heading for our previous programs. And let's go right back out to our phones right now and get back to answering questions. Jerry from Cleveland, Ohio, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
About 99 and 44, 100% of the time I use my laptop. Mm-hmm. I use AC power rather than the battery.
Right.
I've been told I should be using my battery much more often than I do. Is this correct or does it matter?
Was that your wife that told you because she wants you out of the house?
No.
Okay. I was just wondering why she wanted you on battery.
No.
Well, when she says get outside.
Work and home.
Okay.
It's not always at home. So.
Okay.
Well, it is quite correct that you should use the battery sometime. And it's because batteries like to be exercised. And you go like, well, what is he talking about? Well, it's very simple. What you want to do, at least just once in a while, is pull that AC adapter out and just run that laptop down till the battery runs out. And then plug it back in, let it charge up overnight, and then go back to using it the way you normally would use it with the AC adapter.
How often would you?
I have a different opinion. I don't think you let it run out. But I agree with everything else that Cal said. So it's just a different opinion.
I thought with lithium-ion batteries, we didn't need to do that anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm old school. I still change my own oil. So I agree you should get out and exercise. And if you don't use it, you lose it.
Lithium-ion batteries won't have that crazy memory effect that nickel cadmiums had.
Right.
And that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But all batteries like to be exercised. If you don't exercise them, eventually they just go like, I really don't have to take a charge anymore. Because no one ever gives me one.
And the battery, or the computer, when it's sitting on your lap, will run cooler, believe it or not, because it's not keeping the battery constantly charged and running the laptop.
Ah.
So it actually goes into a lower power mode as well. And so you won't fry your laptop with so many laptops.
And you won't have
so
a tasty
hot.
Lap.
Or toasty lap.
Toasty, that's right.
Thank you very much.
And, you know, if Edison had, you know, back when George Westinghouse and Thomas Edison had been battling back in the 1880s, if Edison had won out, we would be on DC for everything. We wouldn't have to worry about AC.
All right, Jerry, that answer your question for you?
Yes. Can I ask you how often should I...
That was my question, too.
...use the battery? I mean, is it the...
How often should he go through that
once
process?
A week,
if you do it once a month, even if you only did it every 2 months, that would be great.
Oh, okay. So,
All right.
You know, it took me a year to get my wife out of the basement with her laptop. You know, because I had a desktop, got a laptop. She was downstairs on the computer desk. And then one day it dawned on her, I could take this upstairs, couldn't I? Yeah, right. Yes, honey. You know, she wouldn't listen to me. She had to think of it herself.
So that's what I wanted to know, too. About once a month, and that'll take care of it. Okay, Jer?
That's very good. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Good call. Question.
Yeah, very good one. And it was an answer that I needed myself, too. Ken from Utica, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Good evening, gentlemen. I have a MacBook Air, I think you call it, and on YouTube, I used to be able to go to YouTube and click on something, and I was off to the races looking at it or whatever. And in the past 3 or 4 weeks, it's slowed down to the point where it might take it 2 to 3 minutes to load, and many times it doesn't load at all. Hmm. And what I'm wondering, do I have a unique problem? Do I have something that's gone seriously wrong, or what have I got?
I'm sitting right here with the MacBook Air right now, and I have the same sort of issues occasionally even on my desktop computers at home, both Mac and PC. And it's not so much the function of the computer that's the issue as it is the connection that you have to the site over at YouTube. And what's happening is that it's just not responding as fast as you would want it to come back to you. Especially during the evening times, when there's high use out there on YouTube, and when it's the highest use for something called Netflix, where everybody and their mother is streaming movies.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, and you know, are you using a cable or are you using a
router?
Yeah, but is your internet provider a cable?
Oh, yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah, chances are on your block somewhere, there's probably 2 or 3 kids that decided they're going to play network games, or they're downloading a bunch of BitTorrents, and they're chewing up your bandwidth.
Well, you know, there's one way you can test this, and that is to go to like a local library and test it, and to see if you get better performance there.
Good idea.
Because when you said that, the first thing I thought of
with one of my kids, they have the same thing. And I'm able to do it, you know, the old way with them, but not with mine. So, at least that's comforting to know I don't have a defective computer.
Well, no, the other thing is, the first thing I thought of was corrupt cookies or your local cache. Mm-hmm. So how in Safari do you clean those out? Do you have to on a Mac?
Well, you don't have to, but you would go into your preference panels, and then
so you bring up Safari.
Right, bring up Safari, go into preference, and then you have a place where you can show your cookies.
Okay.
And then as far as clearing the cookies out, I am going to get that information for you, and
not necessarily clean the cookies, but yeah, you might want to. The other thing is trying alternate browser. If you're using Safari, download Firefox.
Good idea. Yeah.
That's
because
true
that way you have a whole new cache.
Or Chrome. Chrome.
Oh, there you go.
Chrome is the one that I prefer. As a matter of fact, I don't use Safari that much. I find it a little clunky. I use Chrome all the time on my Mac.
Evan, this is a dumb question, but I'm a dumb computer guy. Where do I find Chrome?
Not a dumb question at all. I'm glad you asked. It's a Google product. So
oh,
you go to Google.
I didn't know that. Yes.
You go to Google. Pardon me.
Google.com.
And then /Chrome, isn't it?
Well,
or just go to Google.
If you go to Google, then you can go out there, right there on their page. You can download Chrome there.
Yeah.
You have been very, very helpful.
Well, actually, your question is also helping a lot of other people who have been wondering the same thing. And I love Chrome because it is so fast. And I love it has the one window to
it's
use.
It's like the 50s all over again.
Yeah.
The other thing you might want to do is clean your cache and your browser in Safari. You just go up to Safari, and then if you go down that menu, you'll see a line that says empty cache. Click on that, clear it out, close Safari, start it back up again, see if that makes a difference for you as well.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Couple of things there. Thank you very much for asking the question. And by the way, folks, this is the way it works. Your question often helps a whole lot of other people. So please feel free to give us a call. And we have room for a few more before we close the program out here. And some phone lines are open. So 800-859-0957 is the number. Let's go to Linda in Lincoln Park. Linda, how can we help you on the Internet Advisor?
Thank you for taking my call, first of all.
Sure.
And I love Chrome.
Yes.
You guys endorsed it, and I've gotten rid of Firefox. And now use Chrome.
Yeah, I used to be the same way. I used to use Firefox, and I prefer Chrome much more to it than now.
And I have kind of an oddball question. I don't know if it's going to really help anybody else, unfortunately. I work from home, and I was interested in the beginning part of your program where you were talking about remoting. I work exclusively from home.
Okay.
With a small law firm, just my boss and I. And we had a horrific crash last October, and we had to get a whole new system, but we were running a 2000 server, which was not serviceable anymore. Anyways, we just got a new server, and it's Microsoft 2008. We had to get new desktops, my boss and I, because we're running XP, and we have Windows 7, and they're brand new desktops. I remote in using my laptop. I have a desktop downstairs that was set up with the wireless, and I had it set up through Geek Squad, so I didn't do it myself, so I know it's done properly. And you know what I'm saying, I didn't set it up myself.
Okay.
I'd be worried about it then. Anyways, I'm having a problem. When I try to connect into work, I can connect in right away, no problem, but I keep getting kicked off the system. When I'm working in the middle of a document, I just get kicked off, and I've asked our IT guy, and he can't figure out what's happening with it. And he maintains that it's nothing that's wrong with the server, because I just get kicked off, and I get it says Microsoft, it gives an error message, and the error message says that it's my fault. And it's my connection, and I've tried. I have Comcast, and I have Blast Internet, so I mean, I have like a higher speed internet, which I have for remote. I thought it would be better. I'm not a gamer, but I've got like a gamer speed. But anyways, it's not. I don't believe it is my fault. I've had them refresh the modem. You know, I've called Comcast and have them do that.
Well, let me interrupt you there. Are you a laptop user or a desktop user?
I'm a laptop user. I remote in using my laptop.
Are you wireless or wired?
I'm wireless.
I'm
always plugged in, but the Netgear and all that is on my desktop downstairs.
Okay, so are you plugged in wired or wireless?
We're going to put her on hold, maybe?
Yeah. Well, here's what we're going to do, Linda, because we're coming up on a break right now. We're going to take a pause, and that wonderful canary behind you.
Yeah, isn't he? Always sings them.
We're going to take a quick pause. When we come back after the break, we'll see if we could tackle this problem with your wireless connection breaking. And we'll also talk with Kathy Outs in Southfield as well as we return with the Internet Advisor in just a moment.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. For the latest up-to-the-minute technology news, check out the Internet Advisor's blog at internetadvisor.net.
Thank you for joining us, by the way. Thank you to Cindy Cooper, who has been sitting here and helping us with the phones, and to Scott Anderson. Thank you so much for being our engineer behind the boards here, making the Internet Advisor happen when you hear it. And by the way, don't forget that internetadvisor.net is the place to go to get the recordings of our programs from today and from past programs, as well as a whole host of information, and our forums are open there to answer your questions. Let's get back to Linda, who was with us from... hang on just a second. There we go. Thank you. I'm a clumsy fingers. Linda, you're welcome. Are you with us? Hang on just a second. Linda, do we have you now, Linda?
I can hear you on the radio.
There you go.
Okay,
now you're with us.
I couldn't only hear you on the radio.
My clumsy fingers.
There were a little bit of chatting during the conversation to get more information. You and Ed talked. So, Ed, why don't you bring us up to speed? Linda has got a connection. She works remotely with her law office, her law partner, her boss who is in the law office, and she's having a problem with getting bumped off of the connection.
Correct. And one of my first questions that we asked was, are you wireless? If you're a laptop connecting to a wireless router in the house. Now, for you and I, and if we're just surfing the internet, that's no problem. You could surf and you can get... you're interrupted wirelessly all the time through stray electromagnetic signals. You know, microwave goes off because the microwaves, Bluetooth headpieces, cordless phones, and all other consumer electronics that talk wirelessly use the same frequency ranges, 2.4 to 5.6 gigahertz, between every household appliance if they're wireless.
And wireless telephones, right?
Cordless telephones.
That was a big... source of interruption,
right?
As well.
So those can interrupt you when you're just going on the internet. But as soon as you establish a secure session, especially with VPN, and even Internet Explorer has the ability to establish a VPN session now with add-in software.
Just to explain to our listeners,
VPN is a virtual private network.
So it's your very own like
tunnel,
personal tunnel to your business,
right? And as soon as you have a tunnel established between your PC and VPN, if there's any interruption in the wireless signal, that's interpreted as a security breach, and the tunnel is snapped in half. It's closed.
Boom. Done. For security purposes.
For security purposes.
And if people want to know a little bit more, the internet works off a stateless system, right? It doesn't maintain state. But when you create a VPN, a virtual private network, that creates the state. You're always connected to that network.
So is the solution
so
then
there
for
are
Linda?
Some VPN software now that takes and maintains the state even if there's a momentary interruption. You'd have to invest in that software. And it sounds like maybe their small law office didn't do that.
Yeah, we're a very small office. Now, would that VPN software go on my...
They'd have to upgrade
on
the
me or on
the servers.
Server?
On both ends. You'd have a client portion. You'd have a server portion. The simplest fix to identify this is to plug a network cable between your PC or your laptop and the one downstairs, because it is very sporadic, and you're just going to have to do it for a day or so, just to see if the VPN tunnel or your sessions become more stable. Which they probably will. Now, you can go one step further, and you can search the internet on how to change the wireless channel on a Netgear router. And you'll be taken to a YouTube video with some pimply-faced kid, and he'll tell you how to do that. I mean, I used to do this 10 years ago when the first wireless routers came out. And you basically, every wireless router has a web server integrated into it.
Right.
So you can go in there, you type in the Netgear username and password, and you could change what wireless frequency ranges that the wireless router is using to establish to any laptop in your house. And more than likely that'll, you know, instead of being channel 12, you'll use channel 4 or channel 2. And doing that might correct it. Unless you got some really bad wiring in your house.
Yeah, and also be prepared with the fact that you can go through and do all these things that Ed has suggested to you and do them exactly correct and right, and it could be the problem that your next-door neighbor's cordless phone is kicking on and knocking you off.
She does have a lot of problems with her cordless phone, and we're relatively close.
So try a wired connection. That probably would take care of your problem.
Yeah, that could be it, but also, you know, it's got to be something that's fairly close, usually.
Well, you know, when Ed said to me about a microwave, I said, that's in the basement, and I have a regular phone. I don't have a cordless phone, but I do have a radio, a plug-in. I work at the kitchen.
The radio won't do it. It's a different frequency.
Well, of all things, I had one guy that had e-glass put in through his entire house, and the e-glass actually reflects the sun's rays out of the house. But guess what it was doing with his wireless signal? It was reflecting his wireless signals from his laptops and his wireless router, and they were bouncing around the house like crazy. We had this equipment. So not only was it reflecting, keeping the light out, but it was bouncing his signals all over the house.
So it sounds like, simply put, Linda, one of the things you should try is just doing a direct connection. And check that out.
Or change the channel.
Or even possibly upgrading the channel. I got my Cisco wireless router.
E4200?
Yes.
Yeah,
and
isn't that beautiful?
I haven't lost a VPN session
since. Now, that's an important. That is that's a real step up. But that's a Cisco.
I got the one when I got it. It was a high, you know, like a higher grade.
Well, this is beyond
when
that.
I got
this
it, and I'm always at the highest amount of bars. That's why
This is different.
This is a different class of router. And because you're doing a business, this might warrant the reason for you to go to a better class router.
They're a little more expensive, about $150, but it's well worth it.
Yeah, I think mine was maybe
all right,
89
so
or
something. Yeah. We're going to stop it at that because I want to see if we can get Kathy before we wrap things up.
Thank you very, very much. I've learned just so much from
you.
I apologize. This is probably not going to pertain to a lot of people.
But it helps a lot of other people.
Don't
apologize for that. And let's see if we can get Kathy in from Southfield quickly before we have to sign off here. Kathy, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi. I was listening to the question about keeping the laptop plugged in all the time, and I use my laptop and my netbook plugged in all the time. And even when the netbook was fairly new, I kept it plugged in, and then the first time I tried to use the battery, it lasted about 5 minutes. And both of them are down to lasting about a minute and a half. It's all I can do to just sign off or shut down.
So you have defective
battery. The battery's going to go. Is there some way to kick the battery in the pants and make it charge again?
I'd like to.
The best way you can kick it is to take it out of the device. And you know, if it's really doing really short charges like that, I would suggest you look into having those batteries checked out as soon as possible. You'll probably find when they open the battery compartment, they're going to be a little on the bloated side because they're not holding a charge. Matter of fact, they probably overcharged at one time, and they'll start to swell. And that can sometimes become a fire hazard, so you might want to take care of that.
I see. My netbook, my son said that the little orange light that's flashing is telling me that it won't take a charge.
Well, it means it's effective battery. And this is true with Dells and HPs and IBMs. They have a little chip that's embedded in there. And then once that chip basically determines that your batteries are reached end of life and are no longer chargeable, they refuse to attempt to charge.
Right.
And you won't be able to charge.
How old is your battery?
A couple of years.
Yeah, you need
to replace
it probably.
I can't remember when I got the netbook. Maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, there are a couple of places around town you can check for replacement batteries if you don't want to look for them on the web. But you may want to check into getting those batteries replaced. I would normally go to one of the local concerns. They'll be more than glad to check your battery for you to see what the condition is for it. And then, of course, they'll try and sell you one. And if the price seems to be reasonable enough, then buy a replacement battery. If not, you can always search for them on the web.
Yeah, but if you could support the local
local
stores, those would be good.
We're all in favor of
that. If they're about the same price, then they usually are.
When I open it up and I look at the battery, will it say on the battery what I'm looking for? Like if I'm searching on the net, there's probably all kinds of batteries.
Yeah, for example, let's say if you had a Toshiba Netbook Model 100. On the bet, you could either look for a Toshiba Netbook Model 100 for a battery for it, or you can flip the battery over and look on the little serial number, not serial number, but the model number on the battery, and you can look for that as well.
Battery,
okay. I see.
BatteryUniversity.com, and there's a number of other sources on the net that'll give you good information about the battery.
Good hunting,
okay.
Kathy.
Super, thank you.
Thank you, and thanks to all of you out there who are joining us this week to ask your questions and get some answers and help other people, by the way, when you ask those questions. Gary, good to have you in studio. Good luck to you as you head for the Rocky Mountains.
I'm going to be gone the next 2 weeks. Hopefully, I'll be back.
Come back safe.
I'll be praying for him.
So will we all. Eddie, I'll see you next week, and as well, Q, Cal Carson. Thank you so much for being here. And to our other guests who have joined us in studio, thank you. To all the folks behind the glass making the program happen, thanks so much for doing it. And for all the rest of you who have listened over these years to the Internet Advisor, we really appreciate it. Don't forget, InternetAdvisor.net.
You've been listening to a podcast of the first hour of WJR's Internet Advisor. You can find a link to the second hour on our webpage at InternetAdvisor.net.